The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another episode of The Crossover Podcast. We've had some scheduling conflicts and things like that, but what a way to come back to The Crossover. Georgia beating Florida for the second year in a row. Coach Smart has a winning record now against the Gators at 2-1. Dan Mullen has an 0-1 record as the head coach of Florida against the Dogs. And I guess, would his record be 1-2 against Georgia as a head coach? Was he the head coach of Mississippi State when Washaun Ely and that team lost to Mississippi State?
In 2010, yes. Yeah. And then we beat them like a couple years after that.
And then last year as well.
And then last year, yes.
So that means Dan Mullen's record is 1-3 against Georgia as a head coach, which is also very, very good. That voice you just heard, of course, Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco, and we've got plenty to get to. It's a college football heavy episode of The Crossover here, as we're going to talk about what Georgia did to Florida down in Jacksonville. We'll parlay that into a discussion about the biggest game in Kentucky football history. They are hosting Georgia, and the winner will go to the SEC championship game. I know Kentucky's won two SEC championships, but that was before there was a conference title game. So the reason I say this is the biggest game in Kentucky history is because it gives them a chance to play in the conference title game for the first time ever.
Yeah, and like Bear Bryant was their coach for, I think, one of those.
Right.
When they won the conference title. So, yeah, I mean, that's what college football's so great, because we're sitting here now, and who would have imagined even like 2 months ago, or I mean, I guess a month ago, September, when the season was starting, that, oh, yeah, Georgia's going to go to Lexington. It's going to be a battle of top 10 teams, and the division's on the line. I was worried about this game because it was, you know, the potential trap.
The letdown.
Yeah, in between Florida and look ahead to Auburn.
Look ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now it's, you know,
it's more important than both of those games.
Like Georgia,
well, Florida was important, but now Kentucky's important.
But Georgia's going to play Auburn next week, and we're going to have to worry about a letdown.
I know.
From the big Kentucky game.
I know. It's crazy. And Georgia, obviously, favorite in this game, 9.5 at the time of this recording. So we'll talk about that game, and we'll talk about Alabama-LSU, because the winner of Georgia-Kentucky most likely will be facing the winner of Alabama and LSU, unless something nutty happens in terms of a loss that one of those teams shouldn't get after that game happens. But most likely it'll be Alabama, but yeah, we'll talk about all of those games on this podcast. But first, back to the cocktail party down in Jacksonville. A Florida team that was talking a lot, that was pretty cocky going into this game. A Florida fan base that was extremely confident in their team, although they were very late showing up to the game and leaving very early as well. So one of those things where their stands, even in the first quarter, looked like they were like half full.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I mean, I definitely noticed after DeAndre Swift punched in that exclamation point or mark touchdown at the end of the game, that's when half the stadium was, you could see the blue seats underneath them there. But, yeah, that was the pressure was on Georgia in that game to, hey, not have another Florida coach start off 1-0. I mean, the Dogs were the team that were coming off the SEC championship and played for the national title. And here was this Florida team, won four games last year. You know, they turn around and won that game after losing 42-7. It would have felt like, boy, I mean, has Georgia really seized on the year that they had last year? And so the pressure was on them. Georgia delivered. And look, I mean, the Dogs are going to have to do it again Saturday because, you know, after winning the SEC title last year, and no one expected this team to be as good as last year's team, but it would still seem like a bit of a like a setback if all of a sudden, well, okay, but Kentucky's going to go to the SEC championship game now? And that's what will happen, though. That's a winner-take-all game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we dive too far into that one, there are some things from Georgia-Florida to discuss. Maybe a slow start there in the first half. Both teams kind of feeling each other out. Georgia definitely made some mistakes in this game. We'll get to the goal line stand here that Florida had in a little bit. But the first thing I wanted to talk about was at the end of the first half, Florida had the ball, and Georgia should have taken timeouts when Florida had the ball to stop the clock. The Gators punt back to the Dogs, And Georgia goes on a drive where they hit Isaac Nauta a bunch on the drive, and they don't use any timeouts really there either. And so instead of having a chance to score a touchdown, they end up kicking the field goal with 6 seconds left, and some people even thought they should have had one more throw into the end zone there. My biggest problem with all of that, aside from not taking the timeouts when Florida had the ball, was one pass that Nauta caught that I think got Georgia to like the 14, like 25 seconds left on the clock. The clock stops for the reset of the ball, but they set it really quickly, and between the end of that play and the end of the next play, like 11 or 12 seconds ran off the clock, when if you had taken a timeout, then you would have been able to kind of reset. And some people had said, well, what about the fact that you give Florida a chance to reset as well? But if you're on the 14-yard line, the worst that can happen, it seems like, other than a turnover, would be settling for a field goal. And what did Georgia end up doing anyway? Settling for a field goal. So I thought not utilizing their timeouts properly towards the end of the first half could have cost the Dogs big.
Yeah, I mean, the timeouts are way more valuable on defense, and they should have done it when Florida had the ball. Mm-hmm. That was the first time in a while that I've gotten the sense like that Kirby was coaching there and worried about, well, the things that could go wrong instead mm-hmm. of what could go right. I mean, I've liked the way George has handled the ends of halves. I mean, going back to the South Carolina game, they shank a punt. And, it would be easy for a team, hey, we've got the lead, let's just take a couple of knees, let's play it safe, go into the locker room in front. But Georgia was always in attack mode. And, you know, it took a while. I mean, Georgia did come out running the ball a ton. But finally, when the team decided to, like, all right, let's let Fromm throw, that's when things opened up in the second half. So it did feel like Georgia was a little bit, like, I don't know.
Tentative.
Yeah, I mean, I guess scared it would be probably not the greatest word to use.
Well, that's what I was saying in the press box, and people would say it just seems like Jim Chaney's scared to, and I don't know if it's just Jim Chaney, maybe Kirby too, but Chaney's the one that calls the offensive plays. You know, is he scared to let Fromm go? I mean, this guy led Georgia to a national championship game appearance last year, and remember against Oklahoma, a couple of the big drives that he had to get Georgia, especially the one towards the end of regulation where Georgia tied the game. I mean, this kid can get the job done. You just got to trust him. And I know that the LSU game probably scared him a little bit, but, I mean, this is one of the best Georgia-Florida performances from a quarterback that I can remember,
sure,
other than last year when Fromm carved up the Gators as well.
But it even felt like, I mean, when Florida had the ball, like, well, if we call timeouts here, what if they pick up a first down?
Exactly.
So that's what it felt like. And then, you know, Georgia ended up going into the locker room with two timeouts, and it sure would have been nice to have had some extra time there once they did get down to – you know, whatever it was, the 6 yard line and mm-hmm. inside the 10 there, and ended up really having to just take the three instead of having a few more cracks at putting a touchdown up there.
And I'll gush on Fromm here in a little bit, but I wanted to break down some of the other interesting moments of this game. There was the one where Rodrigo Blankenship could have attempted a 54 yard field goal. The Dogs elect to punt instead, and they end up pinning him deep thanks to Mecole Hardman getting down there. A lot of people, because I think they lined up the punt, then Florida called a timeout, then they came back out and lined up the punt again, and some people thought they should have kicked that field goal. I was one where it's like, look, that stadium's weird. The wind swirls in a funny way down there. Georgia's had special teams disasters over the years down there. I was totally okay with them punting that ball just based on the circumstances of Georgia-Florida in that stadium. And it couldn't have worked out any better for the Dogs. I know we'll get to the goal line stand that happened right after that just in a second, but the punt was great, and the downing it that Mecole did was great. And then George ends up forcing a turnover with the Tyreek McGee forced fumble on Franks. So it could not have gone any better, and that decision was absolutely the right one at the time.
No, I had no problem with the decision to punt there, even though we've seen Hot Rod make kicks from that distance. But like you said, I mean, we haven't necessarily seen him make kicks from that distance in a stadium where the wind swirls
in
like it does there.
Like that.
I mean, even the great Kevin Butler's had bad games down there, and so
that guy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, he's a college football Hall of Famer. He's a Super Bowl champion and all that. He's one of the greatest kickers ever, if not the best ever. So, I thought that was a good decision. I didn't even second guess that or question it from, at any point, even before the Dogs down the ball there on the 1 yard line. But I just, what I loved about the game Saturday is the real difference in the game. And, we joked about this at the end of last week, is how the The idea of third and Grantham holds different meanings. And third and Grantham means, in fact, I think the term third and Grantham was coined here in Athens, and it was not a compliment. But now third and Grantham has kind of taken on a different form, because Mississippi State last year, they led the SEC in third down conversions against. I think teams only converted like 29% against them. And then Florida fans had kind of taken to like, oh, yeah, third and Grantham. We dial up the aggression, and
they
liked
it. They put it in their game notes that it was actually a good thing.
Right.
And it's like, no. This isn't a laughing with you thing. This is a laughing at you
thing.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure that we coined the phrase third and Grantham, and it was not endearing.
No.
But anyway, that turned out to be the difference. Like, our version of third and Grantham is what the difference in that game was. We were 6 out of 8 on third down in the second half. All three of Fromm's TD passes on third down.
All three of the TD passes were on third down, and DeAndre Swift's run was on third down.
And also on the drive that eventually led to a third down touchdown pass to Godwin. Don't forget, we converted a third and 11 on that one a few plays earlier with the pass to Holloman. So, and that was, Georgia was only up 6 then. So if the Dogs don't convert that third and 11 throw there, then Florida's getting the ball back, and it's still just a 6-point game. And in the end, it was 36-17, but I think we can all agree that for most of that game, that score kind of tells a bit of a lie about how tough that was for Georgia.
Yeah, but I mean, they pulled away in the end, kind of like they do against a lot of teams. Georgia, for, 60 minutes, is the better team overall, and that usually shows up in the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, and hopefully it will this weekend in Lexington. I'm glad that game's not at night.
Yeah, that'd be nutty. That would not be a good thing for Georgia. And hopefully the Dogs can get Kentucky fans ready for basketball a little earlier than maybe they were hoping. Getting back to the Florida game, though, the goal line stand, obviously we got to talk about that. Just a very weird thing to happen there. Florida just kept giving Georgia chances. They had the penalty in the end zone, kept giving the Dogs chance after chance, and Georgia couldn't convert. And the one thing that I would say about that, especially when you run two QB sneaks with Jake Fromm there, what's Justin Fields even for? Like, it feels like he would have been the perfect person to use in that situation. He's a bigger quarterback. He's a stronger quarterback than Jake Fromm. Almost designed for quarterback sneaks like a Cam Newton, and you don't use him. He didn't even get a snap in this game, and I think fans are going to start to worry about, is he going to transfer if he can't get any games?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I've said about Fields all along, and how his feelings, like, he knew what he was getting into when he signed here. Like, Fromm was already in place. Fromm had the great year last year, and I mean, Fields could have gone anywhere he wanted. He had been committed to Penn State. Mm-hmm. I know Auburn wanted him, Florida wanted him, but he decided to come here knowing Fromm was already here. So, I'm not too worried about that. But I hated what Georgia was doing when it was one guy would be in the game, then the other guy would be in the game, and they just kept rotating
him like that. Oh, no, I
hated that,
too. Don't get me wrong. But situationally, in this one instance, it just feels like you've got the perfect guy for this scenario on the bench, and instead you're going to QB sneak with your smaller and not as strong quarterback.
Yeah. And look, I know that
and the center quarterback exchange maybe is something they're worried about. I'm not sure. But, again, just armchair coaching in this scenario – just seems like Fields might have been the play there.
Well, I mean, one thing they could have done, too, is blocked 92 Zuniga. I mean, how many times did he just come off the edge there? Like, no one even touched him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. For that to happen over and over again,
yeah,
that was not good. So, and hopefully, Georgia's watching tape and getting ready for stuff like that
right.
in the future.
And I get it. In football now, I mean, a fullback is pretty much, it's an endangered species if it's not outright extinct in a lot of places. And mm-hmm. I guess on one of those, eventually we did put Luke Ford in there to try and block. But I mean, even with you picking up a yard and the defense pretty much knows what you're going to do and you don't have that fullback in there, it is tough to, it's tough to get, but there aren't too many teams left that still even have a fullback. And I mean, Georgia's one of them. We don't have a fullback. And if we throw one back there, it is generally one of those tight ends.
Mm-hmm. So I guess nitpicking at this point, just because, look, Georgia ended up winning the game. And it's so funny because if Florida had won, that goal line stand probably goes down in the annals of Florida football history. It's one of the greatest things they've ever done, and which is a team that's done a lot of good things. But now that's just an afterthought. And Dave and I were talking about this on the morning show. It's kind of like the Julio Jones catch in the Super Bowl. One of the greatest catches I've ever seen would have gone down as one of the best catches of all time.
It would have been the biggest play in Falcons history.
Yeah, and instead, it's just an afterthought.
Yeah, it's a play that happened or whatever. But, you know, it's funny going back to the summer when Julio was kind of, you know, holding out for a while there. It would have been a much – had the Falcons won that Super Bowl, it would have been like, you got to pay the guy that made the biggest catch in the history of the team. But since the Falcons lost, it's like that didn't even really come up. But I thought the ensuing possession there – even though Georgia kicked the field goal and went up 9, it still felt like, you know, the momentum or whatever was kind of on the Gator side. I thought for Georgia to hold them to just a field goal on the next drive and not let them score a touchdown was a big moment in that game, too. Because I think if Florida had been able to punch in 6, even though they still would have been trailing, it would have been a different feeling there with the Dogs' offense having snapped the ball. What would it turn out to be, like 7 times and not being able to pick up a yard? And if the Gators had come back and scored a touchdown there, it would have – I think the whole, like, tone of that game would have felt much different.
But, like I said, before we get on to Kentucky, I did want to gush about Jake Fromm because he was very, very good in this game. He needed that bounce-back type of game after the performance against LSU. And I was saying that I would have liked to have seen Justin Fields come in the second half for him against LSU. And I preface that by saying, look, just because a guy comes in and spells a guy for one game doesn't – mean anything. It's not a reflection on that guy's career, and it's not a reflection on his hold over the starter's job. It was just that Fromm didn't have it that day, and maybe Fields could have provided something different. But I still thought, you know, look, Jake Fromm's a very, very good quarterback, and I always had confidence in his ability to have games like this, and he certainly bounced back in a great way against Florida and was really just slicing the ball all over the field. And I told people this too. It's like, look, yeah, you can bring a sub in at quarterback. It's like, remember when Georgia played Colorado here in Athens, the Dogs almost lost the game. Matthew Stafford got pulled. Joe Cox got put in. Cox wins the game. Matthew Stafford was still the starting quarterback. It was just for that one instance. So I think sometimes we treat quarterbacks' feelings a little too gingerly, if you will. So I thought Fromm bounced back perfectly against Florida. The touchdown passes were great. Finding Holloman twice, the first one where he caught him right in the back of the end zone. It was a perfect throw right where it needed to be. But my favorite was the throw to Terry Godwin where Godwin did that cross all the way across the pattern. And Fromm just kind of fluttered it.
Beautiful pass.
Weighted ball just exactly where it needed to be. And that's when Jake Fromm's at his best, when he can get those kind of quick reads, and we've seen him in the two-minute or the hurry-up offense. Jim Chaney, I'm going to tell you this now. Y'all got to stop huddling because he is way, way better in the no-huddle/two-minute offense.
Also, when we need a yard, let's not run sideways anymore. That didn't work in 2016 against Vandy, and it didn't work again Saturday against the Gators.
Jim Chaney, as offensive coordinator for Georgia, does have a tendency to get cute at times, and I know it's frustrating for a lot of fans. The two-point conversion attempt where they brought in like Akeel Crumpton to run whatever that was, it's like, what are y'all doing? And it seems also like Jim Chaney is obsessed with putting his smallest player in a situation where he needs to get like 1 yard.
Yeah, we saw that with Harrion.
Did it with Isaiah McKenzie against Vanderbilt when Georgia lost on that fourth down.
Yeah, that's the one where we ran sideways.
Exactly.
Again.
We've seen it with Harrion. We've seen it with even Mecole Hardman, and they've tried to get him like to get a yard or something. It's like, dude, well, you're Georgia. Just line up.
That was the other thing about that play on Saturday. It's like, we've run the jet sweep this year, and it's worked, it's been really good.
But I wouldn't only need to get
Hardman
1 yard.
But Hardman had just been in that, like, he had just been injured.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked nasty when we saw that play, and then he was on the ground. I thought, like, okay, that's the end of his season. He goes in the tent, and he's back out there. But that's the other thing. It's like, all right, I mean, he was fine, and that's good. He ended up being able to play, but, like, immediately after that, you need 1 yard, and you're going to run that play to him. Yeah, I just never have gotten the idea. If you need to pick up 1 yard, so you think the best route to that is to run, like, 10 yards sideways.
Right.
That's twice it hadn't worked.
But, again, Georgia won the game. These are just little nitpicky things that we're getting in there, but can't say enough about Jake Fromm's performance. Leading Georgia to a win. Georgia had Jake Fromm Florida had Felipe Franks. That was really the biggest difference in the
game. I mean, Georgia's got Georgia's had the best quarterback even in the loss at LSU. I mean, I take Fromm over Joe Burrow, but Fromm didn't have a good day that day, and I'm with you. Once, I mean, Fields has played, then I kind of felt during that game that maybe he deserved a series or something to see if
something
could have changed.
Well, like in the second half, just change it up, do something. And Georgia did it.
Yeah.
They just kind of laid down.
But in the aftermath of that, I mean, in no way was I, you know, one of these that suddenly thinks like Fromm's a terrible quarterback. The guy had one of the best seasons in, you know, led Georgia to one of the best seasons of all time last year. And he's had a heck of a year this year, too. He had one bad game and he bounced back on Saturday in a big way.
Yeah, can't stress enough how much saying that Fields should have played against LSU does not mean, I think, that Fromm should not be Georgia's starting quarterback. Because, again, a great bounce back there against Florida. And now, another tough road environment for Jake Fromm. He has played in plenty of tough road environments, or at least away from Sanford Stadium environments, so far in his young career. And this is another one. You know, this is a chance for Georgia to make back-to-back SEC championship games and beat a team that a lot of people are pretty high on. I think they got very lucky to beat Missouri. The Zebras definitely helped out a little bit there, particularly with that one pass interference call that was a joke.
Well, and then on their untimed down, it looked like they got away with offensive pass interference. So
right.
they scored. Their only touchdowns were on a punt return and an untimed down.
Right.
At the end of the game.
Right. So they did not look good against Missouri, who, you know, hot take alert, does not have a good defense.
Right, but but Kentucky's defense forced them to like 8 straight 3-and-outs.
Yeah, they had a great
second defense half. Is legit.
Oh yeah, no question about it. But legit compared to who they've played. You know what I mean? I would say that Georgia, again, a 9.5-point favorite as we're recording this, sounds about right. I think Georgia goes over there and then, you know, this is what I think is going to happen. I think Kentucky is going to be extremely spirited in the first half, and that's going to be a good environment for them and everything. But I just think, kind of like what Georgia does every game, the third and fourth quarter, they will have worn Kentucky down enough to where they're going to be able to control the tempo and control the game.
Well, if you keep looking now at Georgia's offense on the road and counting last weekend too, Georgia did score one first half touchdown last week, so that's two first half touchdowns Georgia's offense has scored in its SEC games. Outside of Athens. I mean, the Dogs' offense has kind of gotten off to a slow start. And in all those games now, including last week when the Gators turned it over on their first two possessions, Missouri had Tyson Campbell had the play against Missouri, and then we blocked a punt.
Mm-hmm.
DeAndre Baker had he returned that interception to the 1-yard line, and then it was scooped up by, who was it that scooped it up? Was it Jawan Taylor?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, but so Georgia has relied on its opponents in the first halves of its conference games away from Athens on, you know, basically self-destructing.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgia's offense has not gotten off to good starts, including, I mean, this past Saturday against, against Florida. It was the second half when things really woke up. So, if Kentucky is hot there in that first half and Georgia's offense is struggling a little bit, then, you know, it gets a little bit nervy in that second half because that place is going to be as bananas as any environment we've played in. I mean, there were a lot of red shirts at LSU. Georgia fans had no problem finding tickets to that. It ain't going to look like that in Lexington.
Travel. No, I mean, Lexington is a lot different than Baton Rouge in terms of the traveling. So, for example, you know, I'm not going. I told people that.
Well,
you know.
And I also think just like, I mean, it's weird. I've watched a couple of LSU games this year, and with as good a year as they're having, there have been a lot of empty seats in that stadium. Now, I would imagine this Saturday won't be the case.
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But I'm telling you, those Kentucky fans, they're not giving away their tickets to any Georgia fan.
No. So when I look at this game, I don't know. I see Georgia 34, Kentucky 20, something like that.
We're recording this a little earlier in the week than we usually do.
You haven't hemmed that down yet?
I haven't sat down and thought about it. One question for me that I still don't think was answered with the win over Florida, our run defense is still not great, and our tackling was pretty poor at some points last weekend, and with Benny Snell, that's a potential strength for them against a weakness of ours. In the end, though, I mean, Georgia does have. We've just got better talent, and I don't think we'll lose the game. But I think it's going to be – I got to be honest with you. I would take the points with the home team.
Okay.
Yeah, I would take 9.5. Okay. I think we win by a touchdown or less.
Interesting. Well, we'll see what ends up happening. I just think that, again, it's going to be a little bit too much of Georgia by the time the middle of the third slash into the fourth quarter rolls around. So I will see Georgia pulling away in the second half, whatever the score may be. And that brings us – to Alabama and LSU as we wrap up this edition of the crossover right here on 960theref.com. Bama fans have already put up billboards in Baton Rouge, Brame, and they say something along the lines of, before Tua drops half a Benjamin on you this Saturday, go drop half a Benjamin and donate to hurricane relief. And then it says redcross.org and like Roll Tide on the bottom. There's a big elephant on the billboard.
That's good. So it'll get LSU fans to turn against the Red Cross.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to make that happen. But in all seriousness, LSU, this is a legacy defining game for Ed Orgeron. I mean, about as much as you could have won for a coach that hasn't been there a super long time. But I think it's, 13.5, 14 points right now. Alabama's the favorite. Alabama's just been this unstoppable juggernaut all season, but there are a couple things in this game to pay attention to. The tweaked knee of Tua Tagovailoa, that's something to pay attention to. Bottom line, though, is it's going to take a Herculean effort from LSU to win this game. I still kind of like the points because LSU has played teams very tough. But, I don't know. It's Alabama. They're the best team in college football. It's not close. And I just don't see any way for LSU to really win the game.
I agree with you. And then let's not forget about the Devin White suspension for the first half.
Which is a joke. I mean, that should not have happened.
No, yeah. But LSU has got a... a defense that at least looks like it could slow down Alabama. Here's the thing. Margin of victory, I think, means a lot. So I'm not – Bama is what Bama is. They're a phenomenal team. But their schedule, they haven't played a team with a pulse yet.
No.
And finally they will, and this game's going to be on the road.
And we've got to see Tua Tagovailoa under pressure because, we haven't seen all season him under pressure.
Or playing in the fourth quarter.
Or that too. Yeah.
But here's when you look at Alabama – Alabama is 8-0 ATS in the first half this year. They've covered every first half spread. I mean, when you
shout out to the Beau Rivage for cashing me out a little bit.
Yeah,
on that.
There was another one, and it's 28-0 in the first quarter, and that's where Bama's been so good in the first half, and now LSU's going to not have its best player for the first half. So if LSU can survive, somehow figure out a way to survive the first half.
Can you imagine Devin White if that game's close? Him running out of the locker room at halftime, fully fresh.
Well, yeah.
Here's the thing. If the game is close, within a score going into the second half, and you've got a fresh, maybe the best linebacker, and probably the best linebacker in the SEC, maybe the best linebacker in the country, who you've got fresh coming in, that could be big.
Right. No doubt. I mean, and that's when you're going to start smelling the upset then. But that's a big if now. How can LSU do that? But yeah, let's say it's some tight, low scoring game, because we've seen a lot of those in this series. Let's say
last year LSU covered.
Yeah, Bama beat them 10-0.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's say it's 10-7 at the half, and Bama's leading. Then LSU fans will be smelling the upset.
Then if that's the score at halftime, you may want to go to the book at the half and put some money on the second half line is for LSU.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you. My leans for the weekend here early would be to take the points with the two home underdogs and these two. Basically, these are the two games that are going to decide who plays in the SEC title game.
But you're still predicting then that Georgia and Bama will probably end up facing up there in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But that's a lot of points for both those teams to cover on the road.
Not like you're going too far out on a limb there. Although this could be a game where, we've seen Jalen Hurts a lot. You might not see Jalen Hurts very much on Saturday.
No, I mean,
what was that?
Unless Bama's blowing them out and he plays the fourth quarter.
Well, and the last time we saw them, didn't he throw a pick six as soon as he got into the game?
Yeah, was that against Tennessee?
Yeah,
I think he did. Yeah,
he threw it right to that defensive lineman right there.
Yeah, I know.
Oof. Not a good look for Hurts.
Yeah, it's when you're scoring 50 every week, though, you can get away with those.
Yes, you can. So we'll see what ends up happening in Baton Rouge. You talk about a place that's going to be nuts. I mean, it was nuts when Georgia went there at 3:30. I can't even imagine hosting Alabama in a night game.
You know, I'm just thinking already, like, starting from 3:30 Saturday to about 11, 11:30
yeah,
Saturday night.
You're going to put a mold into your couch, a nice dent.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to move.
might have one of those adult diapers, so you really don't have to move.
It doesn't even – that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I know people wear those to, like, concerts and stuff.
Well, that one lady did that thing. Was it that astronaut where she, like, drove across country?
Wanted to, like, murder her husband or something. But, yeah, people will go do that at concerts, though. Just wear diapers in case, you know, if they're down in the pit or something.
Yeah, you don't want to move.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's a good idea. But I don't even, like – what other games are from 3:30 to like 11 Saturday? I don't even know what other games are on because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Just
no.
Two games you got to watch.
No, those are easily the two biggest games in the country. It's not even close. I mean, those games have the biggest impact on the college football playoff and everything going forward. So we'll see if Kentucky can make it interesting against the Dogs or possibly even pull the upset and what LSU can do up against that juggernaut that is Alabama. All right, Brain, we'll be back next week, and I promise we'll be back next week. We're not going to do this whole thing where we tell you we're going to be back and not. Like I said, Brain and I had some scheduling difficulties.
Really, we didn't want to talk about the loss to LSU.
Well, that too.
We avoided that.
But we're back, and looking forward to hopefully talking about SEC East champion Georgia coming up next week. He's Chris Brain. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. Back next week right here on 960theref.com with another episode of The Crossover.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brain on 960theref.com.